What do Martin Lawrence, Casey Kasem, and Taraji P. Henson have in common? They all have had something to say about the acumen of Turk Stevens. We'll meet him and find out how he's helped others and may be able to work with you on this edition of Frank Relationships.
Listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes, those are my babies. As always, thanks for getting Daddy started today. Mwah. Entertainment industry mover and shaker Turk Stevens is with us today, and I'm curious, how important is who you know to breaking into the entertainment industry?
That's a funny question. To me, it's not who you know, it's who know you.
Yeah. All right, so how do I get someone to know me?
Like I always tell people, all my phone calls get returned. Mm-hmm. You know, that's important, like, you know. In this day and age, you can reach out to people and they can just act like they didn't see the text or they missed the call. Mm-hmm. So for me, I feel fortunate that, you know, all my calls get returned. And if I can't do it in 3 phone calls, I just can't get it done. Mm-hmm. For me. And that's just how I measure things. And I wasn't comfortable saying that for a long time. But then it's to the point where you have to understand your value and know your value. So it's just a matter of just being able to do good work. Mm-hmm. You know, people know you. And then there's a little bit of luck, you know. You know, my definition of luck is when preparation meets, you know, opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so I've just been fortunate where I've been in a position where I've had just always done good work and just been good to people. So when you're good to people, you're not going to really find anyone to say anything, you know, bad about me. You just won't. I can't believe that there's anyone that would have anything really bad to say about me. They may have been disappointed, but those disappointments happen, you know, those things happen in life, but they're not going to say, oh, he's a bad dude or you can't trust him. So that has been, you know, a good thing.
What's one of those hallmark projects that you've worked on?
I think every one of them is a hallmark for me, man. I mean, I don't know. I think in the beginning, you know, I just spoke to a group of kids at the Covenant House on Friday. And we talked about when people request something of you, it's because they believe in you and they believe that you can deliver. So for me, most of the situations that I find myself in projects, I've been invited. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to force myself into it. So as a result of that, you know, I've heard the invitation. I've heard it well. And what I mean by that is, like, somebody will say, hey, man, I need help with something. And it may not have been my specific field at that time, but I knew it was something that I can deliver because they asked. Mm-hmm. And if it didn't work, I'd be like, I can't do that, man. It's just, I don't know anything about it. So, for example, how I got into the film world, television world, was a guy named Monty Ross. And Monty, man, he's been, like, he meant the world to me, man. You know, and I met him based on, I came home and there was a childhood friend of mine named Juan Scott, who was, you know, Juan, we were young. He was an artist. Like, he could paint and draw and sketch. And I wasn't aware that that Juan was writing books and was writing scripts. Mm-hmm. And so Juan came over to the house, man, and Juan was like, hey, man, you know, I'm writing this script. And ironically, at that time, when we were working, I was reading his script. My phone just happened to ring, and Monty called me. Mm-hmm. And then when Monty called me, I was like, okay. And he said, hey, man, you know, I got your number from, you know, Brian over at BET, and, you know, I'm working on my directorial debut as a filmmaker, and I would really like to talk to you. And I said, okay. Now, for me, I was like, why is he calling me about this? Mm-hmm. But I said, cool. He said, well, I'll be in D.C. tomorrow in Georgetown. Can you meet me at this theater? And I was like, cool. And I said, I'm going to bring my boy with me, you know. I didn't want to come by myself. He said, oh, it's no problem. So when I hung up the phone, you know, Juan was such a huge Spike Lee fan. And I'll never forget, man, Juan was like, I said, man, yeah, there's some dude named Monty called, man, and he want us to come to this theater. He's doing a movie. And immediately Juan goes, oh, man, is that Monty Ross? I'm like, man, nah, he didn't say his name was Monty. He said, man, Monty, that's Spike's right-hand man, man. And I'm like, dude, he ain't say nothing about no damn Spike Lee. We going to check this dude out. And so we get in the car the next day, and we drive. And, man, sure enough, Spike was standing right there in the corner, bro.
Wow.
So then he said, man, they're going Spike. And I'm like, I know. Chill, bro. Hold on. So I was kind of marveled by it. But Juan was like, geeked, because, you know, he just was a huge Spike Lee fan.
Mm-hmm.
So we parked and we got out and then went over, man, and I said, hey, man, I'm looking for this dude named Monty. And then Spike was like, hey, Monty. And then Monty came out. And it was a screening, a private test screening for Jungle Fever.
Mm.
And, you know, it was a test screening. They wanted to test it. And at the meeting, I was like, man, this is dope. Like, and I had already been in the music industry at that time.
That was kind of like Samuel Jackson's breakout role. I mean,
right.
He really knocked that out of the park.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he won the audience award for that performance.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a San Francisco, it was a Cannes Film Festival, mm-hmm, that year. But, you know, to make a long story long, from that moment, you know, we had went out to dinner, and then Monty invited me over for breakfast the next day. And he said, oh, man, I need this. I need help with this. And it was when he was asking these things, like, I was like, sure, no problem, because he was giving me direction.
Mm-hmm.
And by him giving me direction, I could take the direction and say, let me call somebody I know, blah, 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 blah. But then, you know, as fate would have it, he went home that night, and he called me. He said, hey, Turk. And I said, yeah. He said, did you tell me you in this group whistle? I'm like, yeah. He said, Carol's here. And I'm like, Carol who? And it was interesting. Carol, who at that time was his girlfriend, and she got on the phone, and Carol had been a model in our very first music video.
Oh.
And I was just stunned. And then it all played back immediately about 2 or 3 years earlier. In Vogue had an album release party in New York, and we ran into Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had introduced, she said, hey, this is my boyfriend. And I remember he was a tall dude with glasses. I said, man, we met at in Vogue, you know, album release party. But from that moment, man, I stuck this dude, like, I was like his little brother. And he just had me everywhere, mm-hmm, myself and Juan. He believed in us. And I'll never forget my birthday, man, it was my 25th birthday. And he took me out to eat. We went to BBQ's in New York, man. And he said, hey, man. And at the time, Spike was 40 Acres and a Mule, Filmworks, was like the independent. They were the guerrilla filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
They were huge. He said, man, have you ever thought about making movies? I can teach you. He said, man, we the best to ever do it. You know?
Wow.
And it was true. But what no one ever really knew was before I even got into the music industry and I was this kid, man, in junior high school and elementary school, I had always had a desire to want to understand that part of the entertainment industry. It was a small burning desire to want to be a part of that world, but we never had access to it. Like, mm-hmm, nowadays it's, mm-hmm, different, you know, but back then it was like trying to get to the moon.
Right.
And, you know, when you have a burning desire, how do you feel that fire, mm-hmm, you know, to really go there? So that's the thing that's important that I was trying to tell these young people on Friday, was that, you know, you just, the Nike commercial used to say, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
it don't say it no more?
Well, they had a new ad. They had
okay,
a new ad.
Right.
I think they have a new campaign. But I remember it was like, just do it. And when you work towards it, the law of attraction, you know, with God's blessing, you know, he will give you what your heart really desires.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everything I do, I just walk in my purpose. And, mm-hmm, and now that I understand it and know my purpose, it just comes easy. It's like a magnet. You walk on the street and these things just shing, shing, shing. They just gravitate towards you. And that's what happens. That's what's going on with me now. So for me, you know, that was just my invitation into the whole entertainment, the film world, the film and TV world, not music.
We'll find out the rest of that. Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and if via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get the show each week. And if we deserve it, please give us a favorable iTunes rating. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super duper co-host. She's beautiful. She is the consummate generalist, Nancy Goldring.
Good morning, Frank.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Great, great.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we haven't danced. It feels like a long time.
I'm telling you.
And it hasn't been a long time, but it just feels that way.
Like it,
I missed you.
Thank you. Wow, thank you.
We got a special guest today that'll help us develop an understanding of the entertainment industry. He's a former member of the hip-hop and R&B group Whistle. Now, how often can you say that about a group? Hip-hop
and R&B.
We can say it live.
Almost never.
You can say it now.
Yeah.
Everybody does it now, but we were the first to ever do that. We were the first to do
it.
Whistle's hits included Barbara's Bedroom. I was in Barbara's bedroom. And Buggin'.
Buggin'. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
See, most... A lot of folks listening, they don't know nothing about that unless they my age.
Now, I know those two songs, okay. But I didn't know that there's so much I didn't know.
Jeff, you know about that song.
I was playing that on the radio in 1988.
Yep.
That right?
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
I knew you looked familiar.
Wow. Yo, wait a minute. That's when I walked in. I'm like, wait a minute. You over at
Kiss.
Yeah, that's right.
And BET.
BET, right. I'm like, wait a minute. As a matter of fact,
we played Whistle.
That's crazy because I kept saying, I know this guy.
He's going to bust me. I know it.
No. Because that's that right around the corner here. It's interesting. Yes, at BET, at the studio. When I said, I know this guy. I walked in, I know this guy. I said, well, man, maybe just being around. But yeah, man, if that's where my television experience came in over with Richard Scott and those guys.
Sure.
Yeah. Richard Scott and those guys, man. And when I walked in, I said, oh, he looks so familiar. Like, nah.
It's a small world.
Yeah.
It is a small world.
That's what it is. And I used to sit in on those editing sessions, man. So when I was in Whistle, and we did Video Soul with Donnie Simpson. And I never forget, man, I was hanging out in the green room. So that's how I got into television. And television started in high school. So when I was at Friendly High School, we had a...
Turk.
What?
You gotta let me finish my intro.
Okay, like I said. I didn't know it was an intro, man.
I thought it was a commercial break.
I thought it was a segue, bro.
After his tenure with Whistle, he leveraged his understanding of the music industry as an artist onto the administrative side. He's worked with entertainers such as Martin Lawrence, Tony Braxton, Kid and Play, Taraji P. Henson, and currently Morris Chestnut. So, if you want to know how important who you know is into breaking into the entertainment industry, how to break into the music business specifically, and what the major traps are to avoid so that one has industry longevity, then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks about the entertainment industry with the ultimate facilitator, Turk Stevens. Welcome to the show.
Oh, man.
Or maybe you should welcome me.
I got excited, Jeff, because I was trying to put it together.
Before we get too deep into today's subject matter, I want to check in on what's going on in the news. What's going on in the world around relationships. Turk, please don't be bashful. In fact, you may want to kick it off. You got something you want to talk about. We want your thoughts also. If I don't hear you chomping at the bit, so Nancy, what?
He doesn't hear you chomping at the bit. I'm not chomping either.
All right, it's my turn.
Yes.
Okay. I got a quote that I peeped.
Oh.
It says, truth is everybody's going to hurt you. You just have to find the ones worth suffering for. By Bob Marley.
Everybody's going to hurt you. You just have to find the ones worth suffering for, which you wouldn't know until you were suffering?
I don't...
You wouldn't know who would be worth it until you were in the throes of suffering.
I don't think that's true.
Repeat that again.
Everybody's going to hurt you. And this is, I'm turning it into right. my own version, so I'm not, you know, I'm not taking it specifically.
He's incapable of a direct quoter.
Yeah, because that's just too vague, and I don't care about if it's Bob Marley or not. I don't agree with that. That's like, a lot of people, they just become so intrinsic about a person's, you know, as a fan. I'm like, they be like, yeah. I'm like, hell no, I don't believe in that statement. Everybody's going to hurt you.
That's I'm not, like, I haven't yeah, that's, hurt that's by what I'm everybody. Like.
If you summarize that, I got to hear the whole thing.
Okay, I'm going to say it again. Truth is, everyone's going to hurt you. You just have to find the ones worth suffering for. And so what I hear is that there's basically, I did a video that's touched on this recently, that joy and pain are intrinsic parts of human relationships.
Right.
And it's just certain people are worth experiencing the pain side because of how much joy you get from dealing with them.
But the key word is certain. People like his that was a blanket statement. Everyone's gonna hurt you. Everyone's capable of hurting you.
Everybody's capable
that's of, different right. than everyone's going to hurt you.
Well, okay,
you know all what right. I'm saying, that's just my take on it. I'm like, everyone is capable of hurting you, but you know, when if Bob says everyone is going to hurt you, I'm like, that's like some Sade stuff, man. Some deep hurt.
Well, know, consider that, the source
right
when you grow up in Jamaica on the conditions he did. Mm-hmm. That's a given. Yeah. So you have to be suspect. I think it means pick your battles.
Right. I agree with that. It does mean pick your battles. And then when you look at it that way, you know, under the conditions at that time, I can understand it.
It sounds more like pick who you're going to battle with.
But then that lends itself back to the position of relativity. Everyone's experience is different. So, you know, a person that had lived at that time under those conditions, and here we are in 2016, we all have different experiences. I never forget, man, you know, Armstrong Williams said something to me one day. I was talking to him, and, you know, the conservative pundit. And Armstrong said, hey, man, you know.
In many ways, the cool conservative. He's actually an interesting
right.
guy.
I did not like him for many years until I got to know him, and I love him like my brother. Mm-hmm. So, but he said, my experience is not like yours. You know, he grew up as a conservative, a Republican. Parents are well off, so he didn't have the battles that a lot of African Americans expect him to fight because that's just not his experience. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting about that is that it's true. So, you know, when, you know, people of color, man, we always want everyone to have the same experience. And then we can't understand that this person may, there's a black person out there that want to vote for Trump. Mm-hmm. and those that don't are upset with them. Thinking that that's wrong.
You know, there's a set of sisters, literal sisters who stomp for Trump.
Yeah.
For
Trump. I forgot their name, but they're crazy.
Yeah. It's
because it's really
it's entertaining how buffoonery
it is. And right. You know, Diamond and Star, I think their names are. I shouldn't have given them that kind of credit and plug.
So,
I think it's their name.
Anybody, Nancy? Oh, speaking of Bob Marley, since you and Jeff have me on some years, I'm curious about the impact of Bob Marley. When, at the time of his death, you know, he passed, I think, in 1980. So what did y'all think of him when he was alive? I mean, he's, talk about album sales and life after death. I mean, he's definitely lived on in his work.
No question.
And I mean, it maybe the only rival to him is maybe Tupac. And you got a Tupac story, Turk. But I'm curious.
At the time of his death, I wasn't really aware of him.
Yeah, because you,
I just knew
you're my age.
I just knew who he was. I just knew the name, but you know, as I got older and my base, I expanded my musical base. I'm like, man, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. But see, what most people got to understand. Let me give this education real quick about the origin of music. So the reason why people have this kind of lasting career or their music lives forever, the origin of music is really was a form of communication. It was never about entertaining. So that's how people communicated and spoke to one another. That's how music was created, was to communicate. So when you look at it from that perspective, then you get a chance to understand why music affects us the way it does, and the reason why it has such lasting effects in our lives is because people are speaking to you, your spirit. And then if you want to go to a spiritual perspective, you know, like Satan was the minister of music.
Yes,
you know,
he
controlled it.
Yeah.
So that's a whole nother conversation. So mm-hmm. when you understand those two very strong dynamics and its purpose of what music did and how music affects us, then you get understanding when people really pursue or create musical content from its real origin, and that is to speak to people. Man, this dude, you know, Bob Marley, when he wrote songs, he spoke to a condition that is applicable at any time in any era, mm-hmm. whether it was 1800 or whether it was 2200. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why he's had that impact, and then it still affects. And then it was basic, you know, when you're simple about reggae music and the Caribbean sound, it didn't have to have too many accents in terms of how we create music. You know, they were simple with it. You know, the basic, you know, strum lick of the guitar, you know, a basic kick drum. And like Lionel Richie says, when he thinks about songwriting, it's simplicity is mm-hmm. the key. Mm-hmm. So when you keep that in mind, it's like chicking, chicking, chicken. It's just a rhythm. So that can transcend any genre, mm-hmm. any group, any people, any era, because it's simple. Mm-hmm. It's not too overly done. It's not too overly played. So with that being said, I think that's the reason why he's been able to resonate for so long.
And the lyrics speak to people, yeah.
Jeff, what you got?
I know it's your show, so I'll try to be brief. There's a reason why that album is called Legend.
Yes.
Because he is one. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Tupac, Jimi Hendrix also postmortem.
Yeah.
Become more of a legend. I was 20 when he died. Mm-hmm. Reggae was bubbling under. Bob Marley was not the first reggae artist.
We had reggae
hits back, you know, Montego Bay in the 60s and all that. But his lyrics and what he represented to the people, spreading it worldwide.
Right.
And thanks in large part to a guy named Chris Blackwell, Island Records.
Right.
Okay. It became a worldwide phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And he was probably 5 years before becoming the biggest artist in the world. He probably is now. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was a debate last week. Who's more famous Jamaican, Bob Marley or Usain Bolt?
Uh-huh.
Mm.
It's absolutely Bob Marley. But today, you know,
right.
I still would walk past Usain Bolt on the street, maybe recognize him. Bob Marley, forget about it. So what he represented mm-hmm. to the Jamaicans, what he does now, there's still a statue of him. You land in Kingston or Ocho Rios and you're hearing mm-hmm. Stir It Up. And he had about a dozen hits. Mm-hmm. He could have had 300, mm-hmm. you know, but it is that pulse. And just one side note, mm-hmm. I think it was George Harrison. It might have been Eric Clapton. He made Bob Marley's one of his songs a great hit. I Shot the Sheriff.
Eric Clapton
said Bob Marley's music was his attempt to play rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Attempt, because he never got it right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And thank God.
Wow. Nancy, what's Marley your thoughts
was,
on?
Marley was already gone when I found out who he was.
So you were a nerd.
Thank you, Frank.
Is that what I'm being?
Past tense.
Thank you, Jeff. I've recovered on some level. But yeah, reggae music, Marley, that kind of was happening around me.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not have called myself a fan. I had definitely had respect for Marley. And I enjoy his music,
mm-hmm.
but when I think of what it means to be a fan, like, did I own his music? Did I go to? I went to a couple of reggae clubs and probably had some of the best fun I've ever had.
I wonder, was that about the music or some?
No, it was
some
absolutely
accessory to the club,
the club
right.
drunk. So, but I did. I remember. I think more than anything in those clubs. I think it was I don't even want to say something as general as the energy, because
mm-hmm.
that would be, there's energy in every club, but there's a certain primal nature to partying in a club where reggae is being played.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. There's the natural roll and flow of the body. I almost want to say no inhibition, and yet there's no disrespect.
Right. Mm.
And
that's
so
that's a fine line.
Yeah, it just a light. There's just so much room to be in that environment. And so I feel if he was party to anything for me, it was that striking the match at another level of liberty that I didn't know it was available until I entered that world.
It's interesting that this conversation can become one of Bob Marley, and really from his quote, and just how many places we find ourselves going on the show.
Well, your show's about relationships.
Indeed.
And the relationship that I have with Bob Marley is a personal one, as is any music fan's. He takes me to another place. I listen to that live. It's a 23-minute song. The live, I don't even remember where. Live at the Roxy, let's say. I think it is. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable music. Yeah.
He on another note, on a relationship note, he had many women.
Many.
He had many children.
Gazillions.
And it's my understanding when he died, and I think it's part of the Rasta culture, that you just, you let the chips fall where they may. You leave things to, there's no will, you don't inherit anything unless you go to
living.
Court, fight about it, that sort of thing. He was out.
But I think, I think it was Rita Marley who was really the staple in his life, in his life. The one that he really, really genuinely cared for and loved. I mean, he probably loved all of them, but there's always that one queen.
Yeah.
That's always there, and rightfully so. I think she's the one that really, and I'm not sure, don't quote me on this, but I think when people say Bob Marley, they know Rita Marley. So I think she's the one, like most great women in a man's life, no matter how many trials and tribulations they go through, they're the ones that keep it together. And I think, Rita Marley is probably the one who runs the estate,
Yeah, I believe she is.
And rightfully so. Yeah. So there's always that one, no matter how much you put her through.
Sure, she hangs in.
She just has that kind of impact. I don't know if she hangs in there, but she has an impact, with men. It's a relationship show. No matter what, there's that one person. I think a woman would never really understand that in spite of all our mistakes, bad decisions, and best intent, to move positively forward, and we hurt the people that we love, there's that one woman that still always has that piece of you.
I can completely
agree. That always has that piece of you. And then I think she, unbeknownst to her, is the one that has that sense of entitlement,
Okay.
But that takes me back to this. I don't know that you know who that woman's going to be until you're in the soup with her.
Right. That's a fact.
That's why I said I couldn't really connect with, choosing who it's going to be. There have been people that impacted my life in immeasurable ways, and I could not have known that when I met them.
It's the joy factor. It's how much joy you get, or how many assets, tangible and intangible, that you get from a person that makes the pain that you are going to encounter worth it or not. That's what I hear and think.
Well, let me say this to you about that. Because the only thing I can say about that is that the quality of joy you get or gain or experience with another person may be what keeps you going back. For the joy and the pain.
But is it really joy or is it contentment? Like, I find myself in relationships where, you want to walk away from it, and then you don't walk away from it because there's some connection that's there. And I don't know if it's really joy. I just think that there's a connection, that you may have with a person.
So it's value.
Right. But you don't see it as value.
Yes, you do. You may not admit it. But
it's value that connection, you mean?
You value whatever something. That's the reason you keep coming back. There's some value there.
Let me think on it. Let me meditate on that for a minute.
All right.
Yeah.
Read Marley's quote again.
Marley, truth is everybody's going to hurt you.
Talking about women. He's talking about women.
Okay. All right.
No, he's talking about everybody, Jeff.
You just got to find the ones worth suffering for.
There you go.
Okay.
That your life mate is worth suffering for. Male or female?
Male or female.
So here's a transition.
Friendship.
Well, see, if you look at it from that perspective, I think it's dead spot on. You know, your kids, anybody that you're in relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it from that perspective,
ain't gonna have then you I can agree with that statement.
Okay.
You know, I can agree with that blanket statement where the truth is that people that you care about, that are in your circle, you know, they're going to hurt you. And I can agree with that statement now.
And they can only hurt you because you care about them.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right. So moving into something a little more, I guess I want to say current, but that doesn't really fit. Who watches Power? You watch Power, Turk?
I watch it every now and then.
Come on, you don't watch Power every now and
then. Yeah, I mean, I just don't have time to.
That's like watching The Wire. That's like watching The Wire every now and then.
Let's be clear, man. You know, people that I know, I don't, it's very rare. Like, you know, the first season of Empire, you know, I watched every episode. And Mo, you know, Morris is one of my best friends. So
Morris who?
Chestnut. So okay. I haven't even watched an entire season of Rosewood. I did a screening here, you know, for the pilot last year.
Mm-hmm.
But so I just haven't. I mean, people that I have close, I guess I'm close to it, so I just haven't had a chance to really watch it. So Omari Harwick and I are friends, and I haven't really watched an entire season of Power. I know about it, and you know, I'm in tune with it from behind the scenes, or you know, from a distance.
All right, so I'm gonna give a little history. It's season 3 right now.
I'm aware of that.
You know, that's why he didn't even ask me. Isn't that deep? Go on, Frank.
You do, sir.
Yep, no, please move forward.
Leave him alone. He's worth suffering for.
He is, Jeff. He is. God knows.
Okay. All right. Well, the protagonist, Omari Hartwick, is that his? Yep. He is
Ghost St. James, right?
Yes, Ghost St. James. Yes. James St. John. Oh, I forget the name. I'm a fan of the show, but I don't know the names. So he's the protagonist. St. Patrick. Yeah.
Go St. Patrick.
He has, at the beginning of this show, at the first episode of the show in the first season, he became reacquainted with a woman that he went to high school with.
Yes.
Puerto Rican woman.
Yes. Right? Who's a police officer.
She's a district attorney.
Yeah. Got it.
And so they reconnected and they've started a relationship, but he was also married to a sister who is
deep into the lifestyle.
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah. So, right. You know, okay, Nancy, I'm sorry.
It's all right. Keep it rolling.
And she knows where the bodies are. She's a G in her own right.
Yes.
Right. Well, when he started dealing with the Puerto Rican woman and what's the Tasha? When Tasha, the black woman, his wife, found out about it, she basically dipped. She got angry and was of the position that, no, this relationship's over.
Right.
Now, when I think about these two women, they are both powerful women. And when I look at him and his dealings, especially in this third season with both of them, like, he needs both of them. And they both eat off the same plate. Mm-hmm. Well, Angie at some level, she's getting into the life where she's very supportive of Ghost and his other activities, and whether she really wants to or not, but she loves him and is going to look out for him even though when it's conflicting with her job. And it seems as though the two women I think it would be incredibly powerful if somehow they worked together. Like they just took it on as polygamy because of the both of their strength, their power, their savvy. If they were to talk to each other as though they were family.
Well, that happens in real life. I mean, you know, my mother, my father, My dad left my mother, and then he remarried, and you know, it got to the point where the new wife was calling my mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've had conversations and things like that. So it happens in real life.
But was your pop still? Did he continue to be in relationship with your mom?
No.
Okay.
That was definitely over and done with. But my mother's, you know, is a counselor and advisor now. So, you know, just before she got her degrees and and became certified. But at the end of the day, you know, there was no polygamous relationship. But there, and it's a rarity, but those things do exist, mm-hmm. where people can do that. But yeah, it's a reality. Now, the unfortunate thing about being human, the unfortunate thing about those kind of relationships is that they're practical realities. And you have to get to a point where when you know a person is not doing good, you have to make real grown-up decisions. And mm-hmm. and those grown-up decisions that there's no way in the world that that world of mischievousness can balance out, where the woman who's the cop or the DA can be involved in a relationship with a man like that and not see that there's going to be a blind side.
Oh, yeah.
You can get away with it one or two times, but to live in it, it does not work. Mm-hmm. All good things come to an end.
Right. So, the question is, how is this one going to end?
Uh-huh. Right. So I'm just saying, like, so for people who are listening out here, fact and fantasies is that, you know, there's nothing good can come out of evil. There's nothing good can come out of evil.
But here's the thing. What's mm-hmm. evil? His, how he makes his money, or the dynamic between him and the two women? Because there are people that are going to be listening that are going to say that it's all evil.
Well, there are all aspects of it. So, I can't say, see, I'm a little bit different. I can't say that a person has multiple relationships and they all know about each other and it works. I don't think that's evil. I think that that's a world that they choose to live in and it works for them. Mm-hmm. It may not be applicable to everyone. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, what I mean by evil is that this man is living in a lifestyle that's illegal.
Yes.
Is illegal evil? Is illegal wrong?
Yeah. There's a difference between, because everyone can find righteousness in their own world.
Yes.
So we have the laws of the land, then we have the laws of scripture. You understand what I'm saying? So that's the laws of scripture supersedes the law of the land. But scripture tells you that we must obey the law of the land.
Right.
So as a result of that, this is where it gets very confusing with man on earth, is man on earth looks at the scripture, and even though the scripture, the guiding forces, but the scripture dictates to us that we must obey the law of the land. So, and obeying the law of the land is that whatever the laws of the land may be, even though we may disagree with it, if you break it, there are consequences.
All right, so you're 3/5 of a man. That's the law of the land. Or you do what your slave master tells you to do, right. Or you die and can get hung. So obey the law of the land. Is that make it right?
No.
What do you mean by that? You got to be more defined. It's very vague and it's historical context.
Not all the laws.
Yeah, but
at
that particular time, you must obey that. But those laws, to be able to publicly hang people, that's not a law that stands today.
Right. No, I mean,
and that wasn't even a law back then. You know, those are consequences of ignorant people who were breaking the law then, because that was committing murder.
Well, right. If there was a time where a slave master could kill.
But that's past tense, bro.
Property.
No. So if we are in that past, if we are standing in that past right now.
But we're not. So I can't. No.
Well, all time is simultaneous, so you could say we are.
So if you're taking the position that the law of the land, if you do not obey the law of the land, mm-hmm. you are wrong.
You've broken the law.
You've broken the law. That doesn't make you wrong.
Right.
So if you're looking at it from looking at atrocities.
I know where you're going with it.
All right, like slavery. Would you say it was okay in terms of, let's say, if scripture, you can look at the.
But see, that's what I'm talking about in terms of relativity. So the reality is that the people that are suffering is not okay. But to white America that did it, they really believed that it was okay. And as because of that, the systemic racism that exists today is still embedded there, because people still believe in that, because it's embedded in it.
But what do you believe is my question?
I believe that I'm answering the question for you. I believe that slavery was wrong, uh-huh. but it was the law of the land.
Exactly.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So even though it's wrong, we had to obey the law of the land. That's what I'm saying. We're not going to go down that road, because they're practical truths. No matter what. And we did what we had to do. And so people, when you have something, the greatest thing about any society is that, you know, you can make change. And historically speaking, in the world, all things will and must change. You understand? So that's the real practical reality. All things will and must change. And there's evolution process. So The practical reality of that is that how do we go about change? So we have Christians that get upset about, you know, gay rights, right? So I'm a Christian. So my thing is that we lost that battle. We should have fought harder. You follow what I'm saying? So if you don't believe in gay marriage, I don't believe that we should change because my belief is that we should change the institution of marriage as I was raised to believe. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I'm not going to be radical about it. It's like, you know, you should have got out there. You should have voted against it. Mm-hmm. They have that right. See, one of the things I do know for a fact is that all people have a human right.
Mm-hmm.
There's a human right. Mm-hmm. And the human right is that, you know, you as a human being, the things that you want to do, you work towards succeeding at that. So if you want to take prayer out of school, somebody did that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you want to be able to have, you know, polygamy, you can change that law. You like the Mormons and Utah, you have the rights to make those kind of adjustments and changes, and you fight for those things. So that's the system that we live in. If you can apply the system, Donald Trump here behind that when he says, you know, with his bankruptcy, he says, you know, it was his right. He used the system to benefit him. So
often,
right. So that's how we have to do it. So how do you go about making those changes? Is you understand the system and you beat the system legally. Some people don't have the endurance to run the race. Some people don't have the wherewithal to make the change. But these are laws, whether I agree with them or not. These are the laws of the land, and we have to learn how to effectively make change. Now they may not be right in terms of how it affects you, but it's really the law of the land.
Was Nat Turner wrong?
No.
Okay, but
as a result of that, he became a martyr like everybody else, and we have changed. Now right. I tell people this all the time, dealing with the subject of what's going on with police brutality.
But he didn't obey the law of the land.
Right.
No.
Right.
He fought against it.
But there was a price that he paid for that. The price of freedom is death. So, that's what I'm saying. This is a long road we're about to go down.
But the question related to if you are wrong for not, if you're wrong. If the legal system, if the law and not obeying it makes you wrong, and you said that the legal system is superseded by scripture.
Supposedly.
And yet scripture includes the legal system. Right. So it's kind of a circle.
Right.
However, if right. I ask you if you break the law, quote unquote, the law of the land, are you wrong? According to you, you are. But if I ask you if Nat Turner was wrong.
He was wrong. He broke. See, you're not going to get me on that one, bro. What people fail to realize is that you can break the law and you're wrong for doing it, even if it's for a good cause. You understand? Even if it's for a good cause, you're breaking the law. Like, they sat in those restaurants knowing that there was white only, mm-hmm. and that was the law. And even though it was for a good cause, it was wrong. And it didn't. Now they could have. They were supposed to go to jail. They shouldn't have gotten beaten up. You know what I'm saying? That's my point. The brutality of it is how people respond.
But beating them was legal,
huh?
But beating them was
no. Beating them was never legal,
yes,
bro.
Yes, it was.
Beating them was never legal. What happens is that people took it upon themselves to enforce violence.
No, police officers beating them because they.
Time out. This okay. show is actually supposed to be about right, Turk and right. getting into the entertainment business.
Okay, all right.
Gotta know where you've been to know where you're going.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. Lionel Richie. You brought Lionel Richie up, and I went to a concert of his about 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was magical. I mean, right. the resume, his book of songs.
Incredible.
Absolutely incredible. Give me something on Lionel Richie.
I don't have anything other than my boy Chucky Booker, you know, as his music director. I mean, I love the Commodores. I love what he represents, but mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know him personally.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. All right.
I produced 4 of his videos, but I don't know what you mean by give you something mm-hmm. because you got it. He's a consummate professional.
Yeah.
He makes a lot of money because of his publishing.
Yes.
And he controls
smart,
it too.
And he's smart with it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think of the 80s, there's, you know, on one hand, it's Michael, Prince, Madonna, Lionel, mm-hmm. Tina.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a couple of groups in there too. Mm-hmm. But that's pretty much, that was R&B in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm old enough to remember the Commodores, and he was a part of it. And yeah. always says he still is. They were They were the elite.
With what does Earth he say in terms of they still?
He
still
will always be a Commodore.
Okay. Even though he don't tour with them, they don't work together.
But they're not even the same people.
No, anymore. No, none of those acts right. are.
he doesn't. I don't think there are any of the old Commodores that he worked with that are still in the group.
Walter, there might be one or two, a couple have passed. I mean, but yeah, but again, use that word legend.
Mm-hmm.
Go see Earth, Wind, and Fire. There's only two or three.
Yeah,
right.
But they're, you know. So it's a good cover band.
and add to a conversation about a legend, Smokey Robinson, who also did the songwriting, makes a grip off of the publishing. He's also worth note speaking at the level of Lionel Richie, if not maybe even more.
Oh,
so.
More. He
higher.
More. Yeah. Motown is right. Him and Barry.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Wow. Right. Okay. Lionel Richie, Taraji. Okay, you mentioned Taraji P. Henson. You mentioned Empire. So what have you dealt with or done as it pertains to her?
I mean, we just have a friendship. I mean, her career is managed by, you know, a friend of mine, Vincent Cerencioni, and Pam Sharp. I can't go without saying that. You know, Pam is a publicist. We just have a great friendship, and I work with them, you know, in terms of, different marketing strategies when things come out. You know, she has a new book coming out right now. So, you know, I had a meeting, you know, me and my partner Tricky, we had a meeting with them last week, and she has a new book that's coming out. So, you know, I'll get a call and say, hey, Turk, we're trying to push this book, you know, help us push this book and handling some appearances for her. But I mean, you know,
and
a lot of people.
What would you do? I mean, you know, you get a call like that. What do you do?
You know, we have a meeting, and you know, when I go to LA, you know, I spend time in the office. I utilize the office space, and we just have a great relationship. So, well, just to be able to assist in terms of, you know, some strategies in terms of whatever it is, project. So, what happened to overall give you overall concept of how I've fallen into this? You know, it started with me as being an artist and as a recording artist, Whistle. You know, I fostered really good relationships with people, you know, with other artists, mm-hmm. right? And I'll never forget, like, with Rafael Sadiq and Tony at the time, I'll never forget, we would have these conversations on the road, and I would always say, hey, you should try this, let's do this, you should give them different strategies. And it got to a point where people were like, oh, man, you know, I like the way you think. And mm-hmm. And that's even how I got in Whistle. You know, I became friends with the guys first, and then they wanted me to be the road manager, and they overheard me singing one day and said, yo, this kid can really blow. And they invited me in the group. So throughout the years, with having personal relationships with people, you know, we would share thoughts and ideas, and they were like, man, they thought my ideas were cool. Mm-hmm. So they would lean to me to help them with certain projects, whether it was a record coming out or what have you, and I would help try to market, you know, and promote those records and those songs. So I indirectly, you know, became like, you know, an advisor or a friend that would help, you know, outside of being an artist or colleague, mm-hmm. and that kind of grew. Mm. And it grew to the point where when music no longer, I no longer was pursuing music, the group broke up, I started working with friends. I don't even know how the hell I fell into that with actors. Mm-hmm. You know, it started with Alan Payne, you know, with New Jack City. And AP and I, Alan Payne and I became very close friends. And as a result of me spending time with him, I got a chance to meet other actors. And with that, you know, you foster relationships. Mm-hmm. So the first thing started with New Jack City. When I was at Howard, we did this, me and this dude named Frank from San Francisco, we did this New Jack City party. Mm-hmm. And we invited Wesley and the whole cast down, and it became this big event. And we were the first ones to really, before anyone was doing them in the country, to do these parties around these films mm-hmm. with these actors, and it started to expand and grow. So I moved to Michigan, and I was at Michigan State, and I was at Michigan State University. I became the director for the Coalition of Multicultural Education, and so I had a budget. It was interesting to do mm-hmm. just to do whatever I want. And a friend of mine invited me on the set of this music video with Maxwell. When I get to the set, my boy was like one of the assistant DPs, director of photography, and Morris walks in, and Malcolm Lee and all these other guys walk in, Tay Diggs. And I knew Malcolm because of Monty Ross, which is Spike's.
Yeah.
Malcolm is Spike's cousin. Mm-hmm. And just being over at 40 Acres, I remember meeting Malcolm. He was at Georgetown at the time. And I was like, yo, we kind of connected. I said, yo, Malcolm, blah, blah, blah. We became friends. And he told me he was doing this movie called The Best Man. So I said, yo, I want to help you promote this film. And I had already done a couple of them, like Ring Mask with Jerry Springer. Mm-hmm. I was promoting these movies on college campuses. And I said, yo, you're my man. I want to help you with this film. And I kind of reconnected with Morris because I met Morris through Alan Payne, you know, during his big heyday. And from that, everything that they did, I was one, was really promoting and helping to market these projects. So it lends itself to, you know, the same thing happened with Gabrielle Union. You know, I was at Michigan State, and I would do these big celebrity basketball games. I would do all these different projects, and I would invite them in and give them this platform before they all broke, before they became these big stars. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happened, you know, being able to have platforms on college campuses and expand that. And then, you know, social media started to take off. So, you know, my relationship started growing. And then I've always produced. So with the relationships, you know, I was able to really continue to do that, you know, produce and have these friends that would be able to come and support my projects, you know, look, things I do.
So you don't let people, you don't meet people and then just meet them and then life goes on, and you actually meet people and cultivate the relationship and often stay in touch and see how you can help them or how you all can help each other, that sort of thing.
Well, we have, you know, relationships should be mutually beneficial.
Absolutely.
Right. And a friendship, you know, and it's sincere, and they'll tell you that I'm really sincere about it. So, you know, I can't say cultivate the relation, I cultivate the friendship, and from that there's always something that may pop a need, you know. Mm-hmm. And Chris Spencer said it one time at the BET Awards, you know, we were backstage and he was interviewing people and I was just back there with Mo. And he said, give me a Turk. And there I was on camera. He said, this guy is Turk Stevens. And let me tell you something. For actors out here in America, when you may have a dry spell, Turk finds you money. And it was interesting that he would say that. And it was like, you know what, yeah, that's kind of true. Mm-hmm. You know, he said, you know, we do a project, and I was, and that's when I said I started walking in my truth, because when people start speaking it, you know, the scripture tells you a man that bears witness to himself bears false witness. Mm-hmm. You let somebody else tell it.
Right.
And when you hear people say it, you got to believe it, because it it has affected people. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, that's kind of true, you know, because I'm just living. On my journey here on this planet, I'm just living it. I'm enjoying the journey.
I want to take the conversation back a little bit, because I remember a drop of the history of Whistle, and Whistle got put on by UTFO.
That's a fact.
Untouchable Force Organization.
That's a fact.
And UTFO was their big thing was the Roxanne.
Yes.
And that was huge for me as a kid.
Kango's birthday party was yesterday.
So you stay in touch with Kango, Mixmaster Ice.
Well, I'm not
Mixmaster Ice, Dr. Ice.
All of them, yeah.
And Educated Rapper.
Right. Well, no, I never really had a great relationship with Educated Rapper, but so that's the thing. So anybody will tell you, it's so funny, man, that I do stay in touch with people. Uh-huh. I stay in touch with people, and I think that's how it's all connected. I really do, and it's always been that way. I was a guy that always just kept in touch with people. Like, hey, man, how's it going? How's your mom doing? How's everybody doing? And that still works. So my birthday party next year, everybody will be there. So
when's your birthday?
July 8th. It falls on a Friday, so I'm going to have a weekend celebration.
Year?
Yeah,
okay.
So I'm going to have a big weekend celebration, and that weekend celebration, there will be, you know, Kango said good luck. I will have a UTFO reunion. We will perform, Whistle will perform. I'm going to have special there, my whole label mates. So we were all label mates, UTFO, Chubb Rock,
well, Howie
Whistle.
T.
Yep, Chubb Rock, Whistle, Roxanne, Kid and Play. We all will be there. I'm going to have the Tonys come out before. I'm trying to get Ray Raphael back with the group. This is a big, big celebration. I've never done this before. So this year, I threw myself my first birthday party. I threw myself a surprise birthday party.
You threw yourself
a surprise.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I threw myself a surprise birthday party. And that was the first time I ever threw myself a birthday party. I'm now starting to say, you know what? Doggone it. Damn it. I know these people. And I want to celebrate with these people. I didn't used to do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know,
okay.
Like, so in 2010, I ran for, you know, a congressional, the shadow representative seat here in D.C. Mm-hmm. And I forget my campaign manager and was like, man, you know all these people. Have you told them? I was like, no, I didn't really tell them. I didn't want to be that candidate that held his relationship. And he was like, man, what are you, crazy? Shock and awe, baby. You got to bring the shock and awe. People need to know this. And I was like, well, no, what does it have to do with me doing the work? And he told me, he was like, look, man, you know, you need to use whatever instrument you have for people to know who you are. And so I had to learn that. So now I can speak in my truth. And I was like, you know what? I know all these people. It's my birthday. I would like to have my friends and my associates there who I work with. And I'm going to have this massive birthday party.
I remember
seeing it. And it happened.
No, it's next year.
Next year. Okay.
I remember back in the day, I used to go see New Edition mm-hmm. at the convention center, the Washington Convention Center, mm-hmm. down on 9th Street. Mm-hmm. And it was, the show I went to was UTFO, mm-hmm. New Edition.
Who did he was on there with?
Nah, Lisa, okay, and Cold yeah. Jam.
And Patti LaBelle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I emceed the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Imagine so, that.
Wow, there's a lot of history, mm-hmm. a lot of history in this conversation. Okay, you got we kicked around Taraji. Now, what are you doing with Morris Chestnut these days?
We're partners, man. We partners on several projects. I mean, outside of just being really good friends, man, we have a couple of projects we're working on in terms of film, mm-hmm. like TV projects. So he's doing Rosewood. It's been successful. Got picked up for a second season. When the Bow Breaks comes out in 2 weeks. Did a couple of the films we're working on. You know, we work on projects together. So right. you know, as co-producers and things like that.
How does somebody get in touch with you? They're interested in. They got an idea of a project.
Well, it's interesting because I don't have business cards because I'm a referral based business. Uh-huh. So people call me off of referrals. And it just happened to be that way, you know.
So that means if somebody want to get in touch with you, they need to send me an email.
No, you can call me. My number's public, man. It's 510-205-0139. It's like it's on all my social media, man. LinkedIn, you know, Facebook. It's funny, people don't realize that it's in there. It's uh-huh. there. It's public. So you
okay,
know,
kick that number one more
time. It's 510-205-0139. That's my personal number, and you can reach me, and then see, I used to have an office right down the street. Our nonprofit. I can't, you know, be here without really talking about my real true love and passion, and that is Good Ground, Good Life. You know, we're a nonprofit organization that really has been focusing on youth violence prevention, mentoring, and we do work study program. Our last grant, we really focused on, you know, underage substance abuse and drinking. And so now we have a mentoring app. You know, mm-hmm. one of the things I created, I told them we needed to really take this antiquated system of mentoring people, and we're developing right now. Should be ready by 2017. It's an app. It's called The Village, mm-hmm. and this app is a mentoring app. And we focus on four different tiers. You know, whether it be the youth, collegiate, you know, adult, young adults, and then seniors, mm-hmm. And they're all. Everyone needs a mentor. I don't care what
everybody
you do.
Everyone needs
a mentor. Yeah. So we've taken, you know, mentoring and really elevated it into our handheld and our mobile devices.
Yeah.
So yeah, so VIP, virtually impacting people.
Nice.
You know, that's what we do, and that's our passion. So that's what I really live for, man. Goodgroundgoodlife.org. We have a Shop for a Cause with a partnership we have with Macy's that's coming up this weekend. Mm-hmm. So you look for that.
What's happening with Macy's?
Well, it's a way of nonprofits to be able to do fundraising projects, and we've been working with them for several years. So you know, we have, you know, you can go to goodgroundgoodlife.org, our organization, and you can buy for $5. You can buy a certificate, gift certificate card that's worth 25% off of anything in any Macy's in the country. You know, this weekend.
One time purchase or. For some period of time.
Well, it's just for this weekend.
Oh, for this weekend.
It's
okay.
The way they're driving. Okay. They usually do it every year around this time, you know, to drive, you know, back to school. So it's a partnership we've had with them for several years. And, we get the $5 that goes towards our nonprofit organization.
Got it.
You've been listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking with the ultimate facilitator, mm-hmm. Turk Stevens. Turk's been schooling us on the ins and outs of the entertainment industry. Turk, one more time, how can folks get in touch with you?
You can reach me through goodgroundgoodlife.org. You know, my personal email is Turk Stevens, that's T-E-R-K, Stevens, S-T-E-V-E-N-S, at gmail.com. And, you know, then my office, my cell is 510-205-0139. We're relocating into a new office in 2 weeks, yeah. So we'll be on New York Avenue. So...
Oh, you'll be here.
Yeah.
This will be your home base.
Oh, I've always been here.
Oh, all right.
I've always been there. Always been there.
Even here being D.C., Washington, D.C.
Yeah, even though I've been living in L.A., you know, this is home for me. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm from Brooklyn, New York, born in Brooklyn, New York, D.C. has been home for me.
Along today's journey, we've discussed our extended conversation on good and evil. Nancy broke that up. Very good, Nancy. That was nice. That's what I pay you for.
Indeed.
Relationship building. And more to the point, genuine relationship building.
Right.
And, of course, good ground, good life is nonprofit. Turk Stevens nonprofit. Thank you to my co-host, Nancy Goldring. Thanks to my engineer, Jeff Newman. And thank you to my guest, Turk Stevens. You've been great.
Welcome, man. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr. That's MR Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, please like us. And if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.